continuation of last week. And next week, we're going to see our last class of archaeology about the destruction of Jerusalem. So today we're going to advance a little bit farther, then we're going to return back because we're going to look at one specific event and the implications, which was the Jewish revolts. We're actually going to talk about the three Jewish revolts that happened in the first century, early second century, and the consequences of this, and why there is a mosque there today. So I want to bring a little bit of the historical context and how that is. There's a lot of information, but I'm trying to sift through to bring just what really would be important for us to know. So we talked about the ascension of Jesus and the place of ascension. It's mere tradition. We talked, right, which is here in the Mount of Olives. You can just keep following, Stephen, please. There are many places called Ascension, but we have the Ascension Chapel, which has, you can go through the Ascension Chapel, which has the foot of Christ, like in the, you know, the on a stone, like the footprint of Jesus. This one exactly right here on a stone. That's just tradition that is believed. The same about the place of the Pentecost, the upper room. This building is much later. As we're going to see next week, Jerusalem was like destroyed. All those buildings of the first century. There's almost very little or nothing that really remained. And it's difficult. So this room is considered, maybe this was the place where it was, and something was built on it, and it's a funny place because it's considered David's tomb in the bottom, and it's the upper room, but that's what tradition. It's also a place where Muslims use, considered like a little praying room as a mosque. We looked at maps of Jerusalem, and we're going to return to those next week when we talk about the destruction, especially this next one. This is the St. George Madaba in Jordan. Is a very interesting map, which is from 1560. So it's an interesting map of Jerusalem. And the next one is a little bit later, probably. It's a mosaic in Rome about also Jerusalem and what were the buildings, the important buildings there. Very interesting. So we don't know much. This is probably later, but this is what tradition holds it to be. I showed you a place where the Greek Orthodox believe to be the original place, which was, you can continue, yeah, go through. This is the inside. So this is the place where they believe to be. So here is where the upper room is, and here is the other place. It's a place that is not accessible. It's not a touristic place. It's held by Greek Orthodox, but this is believed by them to be the real place of the first church. So this was a cistern, and here a mikvah, and it was dug to be a kind of secret room, and they believe that there, as they drained the water, and they gathered in here for worship, and these are the ruins of a church. This is a first century building. That much we know. But if that was really a church, there's no really signs, saying here gather the Christians, or any symbols or any pictures we don't have. So it's a cistern, and it was used as a secret place, and it's an interesting place. So we saw it. Following that, we talked about the Church of Antioch, but there's not much there for us as well. This is what remains as original first century, the road that led to Antioch, the city of Antioch kind of succumbed to an earthquake, and it's there's not much of it left. But there is a church that is called the St. Peter's Church, which is a fifth century church that is believed to be the church which was the original However, again, this is tradition. It's a very interesting building, though, because it's an ancient building. It's an old building, 4th century, as I told you. But there's not really that proves to us that this is from the time of the apostles or the early church, which would be our main goal here. It's an evidence of the apostolic church, the birth of Christianity, right? Again, we have another place that tradition holds, but no proof. This is Hierapolis, one of the places that Paul passed by. And there is the ruins of a church. The church itself is 4th, 5th century, but the foundation is 1st century. So, which is over there. We have the next picture. So this foundation here, these part here is believed to be, you see a distinction between rocks, so like these from these. So 1st century foundation upon a 4th century building, and this is a kind of a crypt. It's like a tomb, which is believed to be the tomb of Apostle Philip. But, you know, it's empty, and again, there's no signs of anything. It's at least interesting that they built a church there where there was a tomb, and it seems to be consistent with the tradition of the early church. But again, interesting place to visit if you go there, but nothing much. The first, very first artifact, Christian artifact, is from the 5th century, so 1400. So that's the very first Christian artifact proven that we have so far today, found in the Holy Land, is this. Is a Byzantine church wall that says, Christ born of Mary, this work of the most godly, fearing, and pious Bishop Theodosius and the miserable Thomas whose building was built from the foundation. So this was part of a wall of a church from the 5th century, and this is the earliest artifact in the Holy Land with some inscription, and an inscription gives us proof per se. So the question that we dealt with last week was, why so little? Why so little, right? Why so little evidence? And we went through a few things. First of all, is that Christians didn't live any different than Jews. Christians lived as Jews. So if you find a Jewish house of the first decades of Christianity, if you have found, let's say, a Christian house, the house of a Christian in the first decades of Christianity, you wouldn't know it was a Christian. You would think it's a Jewish household because they lived as Jews and behaved as Jews. So, because they were ethnically Jews, although religiously now under the New Covenant they call themselves Christians, but they lived as Jews. They didn't have church buildings. They met in houses, so is what we read in Acts. So, of course, you won't see any really building consecrated to the worship of Jesus Christ, because they met in houses. And again, there's no really any evidence. There cannot be any specific evidence. Also, Christians were persecuted. So their places had to be places that looked normal, like a house. And you go into a house and you worship. And they had, in a local community, in a city, they would have several households. So it's like a little part of the church that meets in the household of Stephanus, a little household that meets in the church of Philemon, and so on and so forth. So little church houses because of the persecution. And because they were persecuted, of course, they wouldn't put a big sign or write anything like, here are Christians, right? So they behaved like Jews, and they were treated like Jews. And then comes the question of Christian symbology. Like, that has been very debated. And I want to go through, we're going to go through today about Christian symbology. Very, very debated. But again, it's not clear that. And there's a big debate. What do we have, and that's how we ended last week, that is real evidence of Jesus' times, which is interesting. It's not a Christian per se, but a historical evidence. We have the Pilate stone. So it's limestone that was carved. The consecration, the inauguration, it's of a building that was built and for the emperor by Pontius Pilate. So we know that it was Emperor Tiberius, because it's the Tiberian house, the Emperor Tiberius household. It was Pontius Pilate, prefect of Judea. So those are great information. So we're crossing the emperor with Pontius Pilate with being prefect of Judea. So that confirms precisely information, and it has been dated so. The other very interesting inscription is of a man called Gallio that Paul tells us, Luke tells us when Paul got to Athens, he was proconsul of Greece, of Achaia. And so we found a stone that would confirm the same date and would say, yes, Gallio was the proconsul of Achaia, the same spelling of the name and the same job, the same position. And those are two very neat inscriptions, and they are not directly Christians. They are like history, but they prove that the information that we have in Acts is true. And what does that tell us? Is that the book of Acts was not written to be a mythology. It was not written to be like a child's tale based on truth, but with a lot of... They wouldn't mention historical names and facts if they didn't mean to be historical. In fact, at the beginning of the book, we hear that there is a purpose of presenting a real historical picture. That's what Luke tells us about the gospel. And so he continues in Acts. So that is very important. But what about the issue of symbology? We are here. Symbology. So early Christians used symbols. How do we know that they used symbols? Because some early writings would make reference to that. This Christian used symbols, especially as they were persecuted, as they were looking for other Christians. They used symbols. It is a common thing. I mean, it was done during Second World War by those that were hiding from Nazis, and so it has always been done. So it's quite simple. But to really say which these symbols were, it's very, very difficult. Why? Because we don't find a lot of them. And when you find some markings in a certain wall, you could just see what you want to see and not what it is, right? So one of the most common ones, it's this one here. So this is a marble inscription in the city of Ephesus. Oh, wow. Paul was in Ephesus. He founded the church. He spent almost 3 years there. And there's a Christian inscription. Why is this a Christian inscription? The word Istus, this one here, Istus, means fish. It's just fish. But it was used by Christians as an acronym for their faith. Because the word Istus means Jesu Christos Theou Huios Soter, or Zoter. So, Jesu Christu Theou Huios Soter, which means Jesus Christ, God's Son, Savior. So it was an acronym. So if you said Istus, you were saying Jesus Christ is the Son of God and the Savior of the world. So you were making a confession of faith. It's the very core of our belief. that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and He is the Savior, Savior of the world. So Christians used this, right? And they used it. So you have this, and we have this, which is another particular, very particular symbol here, this Rosetta, which Christians used as well, which was a Jewish, also a Jewish symbol. So we have in Jewish decorations and symbology, they used the Rosetta, and the Rosetta was also considered. So we have this. However, we don't know when this was written there. It could have been a guy that in the 1930s went there and thought, you know, I'll play a prank on those Christians. I'll write here. We don't know. There's no proof when those symbols were carved on those stones. Well, this stone is ancient. It's first century. Fine. But when it was carved in it, we don't have a photo of the guy doing it. We don't have the footage of the guy doing it, right? So we don't know when this was done. So it's not a proof of early Christian because it could be done. And you remember that those areas all became Christians during 500 years or 400 years. During the Byzantine Empire, when the Roman Empire becomes Christian, everything was Christian, and then everything was Christianized. All the Roman pagan temples were changed into, not all, but most of them, some of them turned into Christian temples. And the Roman symbology was out, and the Christian symbology was in. So we don't know when these symbols were written. Some examples of symbols that have been found, but we really don't know when they were done. So this is another inscription in marble. Contains a fish, and an anchor. And here, some other symbols that were used by Christians, mingling letters, Greek letters together. Here you have the Alpha and Omega with a P cross. So a P cross. But again, we don't know when this was written. Here we have a dove with some olive leaf. Comes from Noah. It's a Jewish symbol in a sense. We have that very strongly in the Gospels because Jesus, when he came out of the water being baptized, there was a dove that came over him, but we don't know. Here we have the key ho. It's an axe with the P in the middle, which is the key ho is a symbol of the name of Christ, Christo. So, and then you have the Alpha and Omega in a bucket, in a Roman bucket, technically. But you don't know when this was done, right? It's difficult to say. Here you have the fish. In one of the studies, the things that I watched, some concluded that this was a mark of quality. This was a quality mark of the bricks. The one archaeologist said, no, the guys would just mark as good for, you know, the inspection. They would just mark, oh, this is good, 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 oh, bad, toss it. It was not a Christian symbol at all. And there's some base because they would, you know, there's a whole study that goes around that they would use marks, they would mark the bricks, or they would mark a certain number of bricks in a certain wall as they were building it. So this is better. So this is a church of nativity in Galilee. And we have a mosaic with Greek letters and the fish. So we know. But that's 4th century. 5th century. 4th, 5th century. So, again, we have that symbol, but when? So, some very interesting ones then is this one. So we have a kind of a tombstone. It was not placed as a tombstone because the person was not buried like we do, but it was placed, you know, where the body was laid, that we would put this stone. And this is a stele. So this stele of Licinia Amias, it's from second century, could be second century, it would be quite early. And it was found in the necropolis in the Vatican. So in Rome, in one of the ancient cemeteries, actually, St. Peter the Cathedral is over a cemetery, a necropolis, which is believed to have been mostly Christians there. And even Apostle Peter was buried there. So in this necropolis, that is third, perhaps second century, so 100 and something, there's a Greek tombstone that is dedicated to Licinia Amias. And it says, fish of living. Fish of living. A very interesting expression. So you have two fishes here and here, and you have the anchor. The anchor. The idea of anchor of salvation, of solid. And that's a very interesting artifact. Many conclude here that this was a Christian. And this is how the family of the deceased, even the deceased perhaps in life, said, look, I want to be buried. I want you to do this when I die. To mark, here lies a Christian. The idea. And those are the best possibilities that we have is in tombs, and we're going to see a little bit of the catacombs in a minute. In 2021, in a dive, the Jewish Antiquities Authority found... I'm jumping the gun here. The catacombs. So the catacombs of Rome are places where people were buried. Everyone, pagans, Romans, and Christians, from the 2nd to the 4th century. If you remember the letter of the Philippians that I preached on Sunday, I told you that Paul tells us that from the house of Caesar, some have believed. And of course, there could be persecution for the peasants and persecution for any other common Roman Joe or Gentile, but they wouldn't kill someone from the house of Caesar. They would just tolerate these people to be Christians and so just be done with it. And therefore, in Rome, because there was a lot of noble people and, you know, sometimes the best place to hide is as close to your enemy kind of thing, Christians were buried in those catacombs there. And they would then put a mark to signal, oh, this guy was a Christian, this lady was a Christian. And some noble people, as I told you, from the house of Caesar. So one of the most famous is the catacomb of St. Callistus. It's from the 2nd century that it was opened. The city was growing so much, and there was no room for burying people or cemeteries, that the emperor said, you know, we need to start burying people out of the city. So they kind of dug these, and part of them were caves that were kind of dug or reshaped, repurposed, and redug and made bigger to be tombs. And it was like a underground cemetery, so to speak. And again, it was used by all Roman citizens, pagans and Christians. And in there, we find some of the most astonishing symbology for Christians. And again, there's a lot of debate. So there was one that I watched. It was a dolphin that was holding a trident. And some believed it was Christian. Dolphin was a symbol of life, of vitality, the trident of Trinity. So they thought it was like a kind of hidden symbol of Christianity. Others think, well, dolphin has been used in a pagan symbology as well. It was a pagan guy. The trident is a symbol of Neptune. So this was a worshiper of Neptune. So there's a lot of debate that pretty much doesn't get anywhere because it's pretty much what you believe and your assumptions. But the symbology is interesting, right? So this is one of the earliest ones, and it seems to be, this one seems to be clearly a Christian, because the Jewish didn't use that much, and that's a strong, is a good shepherd. So the image of a young man carrying the sheep on his shoulders is definitely a Christian symbol. The idea of fish and bread, another symbol of that has been used Christians, and we know because it was used much later. So we find it on 6th, 7th century being used by Christians. So fish and bread, the symbol of multiplication. Again, the key hole, the symbol for Christ, but again, we don't know when someone put that there. It could have been a crusader in the 11th century that went there in Rome, and just, you know, someone else in the 12th century, 9th century, 7th century, whoever it was. And here is one of the earliest depictions of the celebration of the Lord's Supper. Very interesting. Very interesting as well. They have depictions of baptism, and there's other interesting pictures of it. So the catacombs of Rome, they're very interesting. But again, very difficult to put a date. So that is the least 2nd century, so 100 and something. I think the catacombs, they were open like 130, 140. So it's from that on to 300 and something. So this time of 200 years, everyone from Rome was being buried there. So we don't know if it's 200, if it's 300, it's 400, so we don't know. But a very interesting item was found in 2021, was brought to our knowledge. It's Israel Antiquities Authority, found in a dive by the coast of Israel, the port of Caesarea. They got to a shipwreck, and they found this ring. It was dated of the 3rd century, maybe 1st century, maybe 3rd century. Some guys put around 140, like the earliest ones put it at around 140. And this is believed to be see here what it has? The Good Shepherd symbol. The same that we see in Rome. See, can you go back, Stephen, just one more? So, the idea of the shepherd carrying the sheep. Go back to the next one again, the shepherd carrying the sheep. He's dressed in Roman clothes, so he's not dressed in kind of normal peasant clothes. He's dressed in Roman clothes, and he's wearing. And a guy that would have money to do a ring like this would be certainly a guy that would have a lot of money as well. So he was probably Roman. It was a Roman ship that it was found. There was actually two wrecks, one close to the other. They found a lot of artifacts, a lot of interesting archaeological, but for us, this is the interesting one. One very interesting item as well is of the Christian symbology is a drawing of a boat. And boats were used as a Christian symbol as well in the first centuries. We are seeing that in Mark, like Jesus on the boat all the time. He calms the storm. He's on the boat. There's the great catch, the miraculous catch, or twice. So boat is a symbol of Christian. It's a symbol of sailing, of being sailing through the storm. And this is what's called Domini Evimus inscription, which is in the Holy Sepulchre Church. So this inscription is on the wall of the Holy Sepulchre Church. And it has here the inscription under it that says, Domine Evimus, which means, Lord, I arrived. It's like this pilgrim, when he got to the church, so he thought, I'll mark my presence here. As we see sometimes in national monuments, that people go there and write their names on it, you know. This guy just did that. I'll write. So he wrote, he made a boat and he wrote, "Lord, I arrived here. Lord, we have come." Like, probably that was a vow. It was a promise. Something that happened. So it's believed. Maybe someone that was sick, something that he got. He traveled to the Holy Land and he wrote it. We don't know when it was written, but the shape of the boat gives us an idea that is early in the Christianity. Early in Christianity. But when? We don't know. For instance, one very debated, which is considered to be one before year 70, is an ossuary box. We talked a lot about them. And it's a fish in an ossuary box that was found in the Tapiot tomb. The Tapiot tomb is that tomb that they believe that they found the bones of Jesus. Remember the guy that thought he found the bones of Jesus because it was Jesus, son of Joseph, and there was Miriam, and there were others that they thought it was Mary Magdalene that was married to Jesus, and there was a Judah, son of Jesus. Remember the Tapiot tomb that held the bait? One of the things that led them to conclude that that was Jesus' family is a fish. So they have the Jonah fish, which they take as a symbol of Jesus Christ. You remember that Jesus said that no sign would be given to them but the sign of Jonah, because he would stay 3 days like Jonah in the bottom of the earth, like deep down in the earth, and would come up. So, and this was found in the Tapio tomb, but most understand that this could be carved much later. They don't even know if this is original to the time. It could have been done in the 7th century. There's no proof of that. And it's a very random item. Another debate is the cemetery in the Dominus Flevit Cemetery. The Dominus Flevit is that chapel at the Garden of Olives. We looked at it. The chapel of the Garden of Olives, Dominus Flevit, meaning the Lord cried, where the Lord cried, where he prayed. And adjacent, a few yards away from it, there is this cemetery that was dug. And there are many ossuaries, and they are interpreting these signs as Christian signs. And in here, there is also, can you just move along? The inscription of a Shimon bar Jonah. So they believe that this is Apostle Peter, as we were talking. Peter died in Rome. He was probably buried in Rome. But when they got his bones and put in an ossuary box, they believe that this was transported back to Jerusalem. The more skeptic ones believe that the story of Peter going to Rome and dying in Rome is all invented by Christians, that Peter died in Jerusalem and he was buried there at Dominus Flevit Cemetery. And there are others. For instance, they believe that this here is a cross. And they'll say, "Christian, see, it's a cross. Do you see a cross there?" And this is I didn't put the inscription here, but it's, I don't read much ancient Hebrew, but it's this is the Safida one, I think. I can't read much. I'm not very, but that's what it is. And they found a rock there that had a cross. Well, but again, this cross could have been done 7th century, 8th century, whatever. And a rock that had a cross, I mean, it was, from the 4th century on, a place where it was built a church. It was acknowledged as a place for pilgrims to go. A pilgrim could have got there in the 5th or 6th century and said, "Here," like the one guy that wrote put the graffiti on the Holy Sepulchre Church. So there is the symbology. We don't see the use of the cross until 330, when Helena, the mother of the Emperor Constantine the First, was sent to Jerusalem to find holy sites. And when she gets there, she's the one who identifies the Holy Sepulchre site, and she's the one that found the cross of Jesus. And she's the one who says, "This, we should treasure this. It's where he died. It's not a symbol of shame. It's a symbol of our faith," like Paul says in Corinthians. And she's the one that starts putting cross as a symbol of Christianity as she found the Holy Cross. So there was the Church of the Holy Cross as well in Jerusalem. This church was destroyed. The cross was probably destroyed, although it said that parts of it went to Rome or here. There's the whole story, which we're not going to go into. But it was the mother of the emperor who kind of said, we should use the cross as a symbol. So starting then on 5th, 6th century, the cross becomes more and more. But never a plain cross. Never a plain cross. Not always, and also not a cross with a man in it. It's always a cross with letters. Always a cross with some symbology, with a deeper symbology. And much later, the cross, the plain cross, or the man on the cross starts to be used. What is the best evidence that we have of early Christianity? I told you last week. Is this here? Is this much? Okay? This much. And this is the front and the back. So it's not two, it's one. But this is P52 fragment, is the proven, uncontested, earliest document that talks of Christianity. And this contains John 18:31, and then the other side, parts of 18:37, 38, and it's dated of 130. And this is uncontested, like even non-Christian archaeologists know. This papyrus, this piece, this fragment, is from John, and it dates of 130. So this is the best proof that by 130, Christians were already disseminating their text. So if they were writing texts and disseminating, copying, and multiplying, it means that they were already, as a tradition that has reached other parts for a few decades, and that they were strong. So this is a proof that there is like a lot going on, right, before it could happen. But there's this fragment here, and it's very debated, but this fragment, the next one, which is fragment 7Q5, so it means that it was found on Cave 7 of Qumran, and it's manuscript 5. So this is what was found in one of the Qumran caves. Remember those Qumran caves? Is that those caves around the Dead Sea, very close to the Dead Sea, where a lot of very early manuscripts were found in 1960s. And this manuscript here that contains 18 letters, and there's a huge debate if they are from Mark 6, because they just have letters, and then these guys do an amazing work, and they're very good at their job, so much that they see a few letters and they think, oh, it might be this text, and they compare, and they would they see the fibers and how much it was, so they would see it would probably was this size, so there were probably this many letters, so you probably read this much verse here, and it would start the verse back here again. So these guys do, like, they reconstruct pretty much the whole page based on this thing, and see if it fits and how it would be. It's a huge study. It's very academic. It's peer-reviewed. And it's debated because some will say no, but those that disagree have not presented any other text that this would relate to unless Mark 6, 52, and 53. And this is dated of the 50s. So in the 50s, the Gospel of Mark had already been written, and it was being copied and distributed. So that is an amazing find. Of course, again, there's a lot of counter argument against it, And the point, they cannot say that this is fake, and they cannot say it's not from the 50s. What they can say is not Mark, right? The text, the 18 letters there, they're not from Mark. Because you see that here, you can see kind of part of a word. Here's the end of a word. Here's the beginning of a word. Here you have two letters. So you kind of have to, it's a puzzle work, right? It's like if you found a puzzle, two pieces of a puzzle, and it was from a puzzle of 1,000 pieces, and they say, you now have to go to a store and find from what puzzle this was part of, right? And you have just the two puzzles. So it's an interesting word. But considering the context, considering how Christians were translating the text and copying the text, considering how Christianity was, it's plausible. And it's the best explanation. But with just 18 letters, it's difficult to prove the text. It's not like the P52. The P52 would have like great lengths, like we'll have full phrases. So it's easy to identify full phrases. But like broken, it's not. But that it is. And that's what I tell you. Like if God wanted us to unearth a piece of fragment that could be like this, with, again, the Gospel of Mark or Matthew from the 60s, it would just be a slap in the face of all these guys. And God can do that because that's when those texts were written. But God has not done it. So our faith remains the same. Now, going forward, and I have to speed up because of our time, what is the earliest church building that we have in the whole world? Like a building that has been consecrated to Christian worship that is standing, I mean, partially, all broken, but there. You probably won't know. I didn't know. I'll confess it. Is this place here in Syria. It's called Dura Oropus. That is from 233 A.D. And this is the remainder of this building. And this is in Syria. Okay? So this is the earliest Christian building, meaning a building consecrated to Christian worship, right? How did they identify? They identified by the stones, the mosaics. They were taken from there, but they had all Christian symbology and all of that. That's how they identified, because, of course, if you look just this, you would say, how do you know that this is a church? Well, you know by the mosaics, the floor that had the Christian symbols. So, and it's dated of 233. This is the earliest in the whole world Christian building or church consecrated by Christians. Here another photo of it. Okay, the second one is in Jordan. So this was in the north, like up Syria, right? North of Holy Land. So this is Jordan. But this is like on the Gulf of Aqaba, which is quite here. So Jerusalem, so Dead Sea, here Jerusalem, here Galilee. This is quite far. South of the desert of Arabia. It's part of Jordan because Jordan has like just a sliver of land, so they have a little bit of a port, which is just there. And this is the, I guess the other photo was the same church, I'm sorry. So this is the Aqaba church in Jordan, which is dated from 293 A.D. All right, so these are the two. But we have the ruins of the churches of Revelation. So we have seven, but we have just three of the ruins of the church. And as you see, this city's, Thyatira, don't exist anymore in the sense of they're populated, they don't exist anymore. This is a very, it's a geological area that has a lot of earthquakes. Most of these cities were destroyed. They also stopped to be centers of trade of importance. There was for 1,000 years, they were in control of the Ottoman Empire, which was Muslim. So, of course, there were not many Christians, and it was a different way of doing it. But we have the ruins of the church of Thyatira, of Philadelphia, and Sardis. So these are church buildings. The symbology are there. They are estimated to be from the 4th century on. Some of those are a lot later, like this. This is later Byzantine. These are just what remains of what would be a huge cathedral. It was a huge Roman cathedral. You can see, like, just from the pillars how big. This would be like an arch here. See? An arch that would be over here. So it would be a huge building, but it's much later. That's Roman. And those churches are there. You can visit. But we're going to the end, but hold on, please. There are two more things I want to show you. In Rome. So in Rome, what is believed to be the earliest church in Rome is the Santa Prudenziana. But we're not sure. So what we have, this is Santa Prudenziana, which is said to be that there was a Christian church there of 140. But Pastor, didn't you say that there was a Christian, the earliest Christian was 233? Yeah, proven that we know. So underneath of this church, which is like 18th century or something, this is an 18th century building, there is an earlier building, okay? And there are photos of it here. And this, according to the tradition, is said that it was a church where the Christians of Rome gathered. And this building was dated, this foundation was dated of 140. There were, as you can see, there were no symbols there. Why? Because if Christians had a building for gathering, they were still being persecuted. They wouldn't put a big, here is a Christian church kind of sign, because it would be very easy if they were caught in a meeting to be identified. So it was a kind of a unmarked place, but a big building where they met, which was, and this was consecrating to St. Prudenziana. All right, so this is, again, tradition, but a very interesting, there's a church there standing. And what we have, and this is solid historical information, is the prison where Paul was held, which is the Mamertine prison. Mamertine prison, which is this building here today. On the top, it is something, it's like a library or something, and the prison is at the bottom. This was a 7th century before Christ prison. So it's from the very beginnings of the Roman. When Romans were, they built this prison, and it was the prison where prisoners would stay. And Paul is believed to have stayed there. Not the first prison, which was a house arrest, but it's believed that he was released. And then a few years later, a decade later, he was arrested and killed. And he stayed in here. So this is kind of a dungeon, like that was built. And this is for the 7th century. And of course, when in the 4th century Christians become the majority of the empire with the support of Constantine, he turns this into kind of a chapel place, where it's believed that Peter and Paul, by the way, had stayed there. And of course, it's mere tradition, but St. Peter Church. This is St. Peter Cathedral. This is St. Peter Square. It is believed that Peter was crucified here. Why? Because according to the early traditions, it says that Peter was crucified by the obelisk in the circus. And as you cross maps and you do all the historical accounts, and you cross with the maps, and you cross all of that. This was where the circus was, where they run like races, and there were shows. And this was at the center of it. There were like some Roman representations of that. So this obelisk, which was brought from Egypt, was placed here by one of the emperors. One of the emperors. And it said that Peter was crucified by the obelisk. So The Colosseum didn't exist yet, so Christians were not being fed to the lions there. They were being brought to this place and exhibit to the population. And it's believed that Peter was brought here and crucified. So is the tradition. And therefore, here they consider like a holy place, and that's why it was built, the St. Peter Cathedral. But there's no like very early building there. As I told you, under here, under St. Peter Cathedral, is believed to be a cemetery, the cemetery of Christians. That's what it is believed that it was initially. But again, this is all tradition. There's not much there. All right? Again, I can't give you a lot of archaeology interesting facts of archaeological significance because there aren't. And what we have cannot be dated properly. So it's difficult to say. We have fairly established history of Christianity from the 4th century on. But while the church was persecuted, it was difficult to keep record of things. It was very incriminating to keep record. So we have those finds. But however, through the fragments of how Christians were copying the Bible and disseminating the Bible, we can track the growth of Christianity. And we see is that they're first in Judea, in that region, then they spread. So we see Christian manuscripts on Egypt, and we see them going up to the Caucasus, going east, spreading to Europe. So we see them irradiating. And by this, we can trace the progress of Christianity and where there were Christians, just looking at the fragments. And they are the best element. Of course, I could bring you a lot of fragments. I just brought two, which I think are the most interesting. But through them, we have kind of a good proof of how Christianity evolved and where Christians were, because Christianity was always a religion of the text. It was always, and it has been. And that's very meaningful. And through the text and the copy and the multiplication and translation of the text, we see how Christians evolved, and that's very interesting. But that in itself would be a whole series of studies. If we go into manuscriptology, and Christian manuscriptology would be a whole another series. Let's pray, and it's